This is the Home Tech Podcast, show number 10 for February 2nd, 2011. Happy Groundhog Day to you this evening. We are live from the studios of the Average Guy Studios here in Omaha, Nebraska. Although I only have Christian with me tonight. Christian, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing all right. How's it going, Jim?
Good. And you're not buried in Buffalo, so to speak?
Not too bad, nope. Yeah.
The storm didn't get to you. Of course, the big news of the week is the storm moving across the country. One of the largest ones they say they've seen in a while, burying everybody in either rain, ice, or snow. And so we hope that if you're listening to this live, that you're not too buried. And if you're listening to it later or recorded, you've dug out. Christian, what have you been working on this week? What's been keeping you busy besides school?
Been keeping busy with BIOS mods and a lot of new stuff going on there in terms of site features. We added added an FAQ section. So been kind of building out and expanding that.
Besides keeping our site at theaverageguy.tv up and running, you've been over there keeping that one going. And didn't you just recently come across some milestone from a viewer or a user standpoint?
Yeah, we just passed 15,000 users this month.
Awesome. And that's bios-mods.com. I still don't know if I'll ever use that site.
Probably not.
But you have a lot of folks using it, and it's a very successful site. So nice work. I want to let everybody know again, if you're listening live, that there's been some changes to the podcast schedule. So if you've tuned in looking for the Home Server Show, although it'd be a little early for that since we're starting at 6 p.m. Central this week, Home Server Show moves to Thursday, which is tomorrow, same time, 8 p.m. Central. Dave had some things going this week and needed to move that date, so we just flip-flop podcasts. And the Home Server Show is tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Central. And then there's a special fitness tech podcast on Friday, 9:30 Central. So a little bit later in the evening, but hey, it's Friday. Although that's Saturday in Australia. But Friday, 9:30 p.m. Central, Carrie's going to join us again. And we've got some good stuff to talk about on the fitness tech podcast. And Christian, I mentioned to you earlier, that podcast has actually caught us at the Home Tech here. In numbers, so it's doing really well. If you haven't stopped over to theaverageguy.tv and checked out the other podcasts that are out there, give it a listen. We recorded the first ever financial tech podcast, not last week, but 2 weeks ago, and we have a new one coming up here either this week or later next, and Andrew Hunt is joining me from Gallup, and we've been talking about all things financial and all things tech. So that's kind of cool. If you want to reach the show, you can do that podcast at theaverageguy.tv. And I've gotten a couple emails in the last couple weeks, so I appreciate your guys' feedback. And Byron, I appreciate your email. You're out there in chat and giving me some questions to work on for the Drobo in response to the Drobo post that I put on theaverageguy.tv. Drobo has supplied me with an FS, the Drobo FS. That's a 5-bay enclosure, and as soon as the Windows Veil Beta 3, whatever they're going to call it, comes out here, whenever that is, we'll get that tested with the new Windows Home Server box, and I'll have some new posts, including some video and some streaming music, so that'd be kind of fun. So all that stuff's coming up, and stay tuned right here at the Average Guy Network. We got a lot of busy podcasts going on over the next couple weeks, and if you do have any feedback, shoot us a note. You can reach me on Twitter at Jay Collison or twitter.com/Jay Collison. Christian, have you set up Twitter yet?
Not yet.
You're holding out, huh?
I'm still mulling over it. It's a decision.
Yeah, it's kind of a commitment, and you know, I had two Twitter accounts for a while. I had the Jay Collison, and I had the Average Guy TV Twitter, and I couldn't do two Twitter accounts. It's too hard. Well, and then I have one. We have an Oracle user group here in the Omaha area, in the Heartland. We call it Heartland OAUG or Heartland OUG. And so I had three Twitter accounts that I was trying to stay up on, and I was using things like TweetDeck and some other Twitter apps to try and manage all three. And between that and Facebook, I just couldn't keep up. So something had to give, and I ended up closing down theaverageguy.tv because I just couldn't do it. So I'm encouraging folks just to follow me at Jay Collison on Twitter. All right, I want to cover a little bit of news, and then we got some things to talk about as far as when it comes to sleep and hibernation on your PC. So this week, Google launched its iTunes competitor or its iTunes App Store. It's called the Android. This is a surprise. The Android Market, pretty generic. Of course, Google is behind that, and it's their first version. It's available for Android phones and tablets. Now, Christian, you're a Windows Mobile guy.
Yep.
So this isn't necessarily going to pertain to you. A quick survey there in chat. Any Android users out there? You know, I'm an Android user now, and so I like to pimp the Android stuff. But any others out there? Android. So Android came out and released its first version of their marketplace. Looks a lot like Hulu and iTunes. Nothing original. And really what this does, I mean, before you were kind of restricted on your Android phone to the marketplace app that was on it. And so if it wasn't in the marketplace, you really couldn't get access to those apps. This really does open up a space for folks that want to develop apps and not necessarily put them through the marketplace. Google did this kind of in response to what's going on with apps in the iTunes store. So now developers can upload YouTube videos to promote their apps in the Android market. That wasn't available before. You could only do screenshots. It's sometimes it's hard to see what it's like unless you really get a video of some kind. You know, Android also, and Christian, of course, Windows Mobile doesn't have any kind of, well, doesn't have an app store of any kind. Are there any apps?
There is, like, it connects to the Windows Marketplace, okay. But I don't really use it.
Yeah. Well, and in this case, with Android, you used to get 24 hours to buy the apps, and if you returned them, you got your money back, and they just shortened that up to like 15 seconds or something ridiculous along those lines. Yeah, even if you make a mistake, it's pretty difficult to get your money back in the Android marketplace. So adding this functionality where you can now promote your apps through YouTube videos will be helpful. Users can also tweet links directly from the Android web market. You can't do that in iTunes today, so that's one advantage over iTunes. And you can also buy an app on the web, and it downloads to your phone. That's something you can't do on the iPhone or the iPad. So in direct response to the iTunes marketplace, and I haven't gone back. Let me go back to chat and see. I imagine if you don't have an Android phone, you have an iPhone. If you don't have an iPhone, you don't have a smartphone at that point. I mean, no offense, but I mean, my Palm Pre, there's not many of those folks out there. Not many folks. So Brian's a web OS fan out there, and I held on even when I went Android. I held on to my Pre, and I use it in the car to listen to podcasts because it's a pretty good pod catcher from that standpoint. Christian, how do you listen to your podcast? I mean, typically, well, we talked about that a couple weeks ago. You use Subsonic, right?
Right, yeah.
How do you listen to a mobile?
Mobile? That's actually a good question.
Yeah.
Well, I can connect to my Subsonic server straight from my phone. So if I were going to do that, that's how I would do it. But I don't really listen to podcasts on my phone, so.
Okay.
I don't know. I'd rather sit down and be listening to it than just be distractedly listening to it on my phone while doing something, so.
Okay, so
that's just me.
That's not a huge draw for you to have that with you. Hey,
yeah.
So from the chat room, how do you listen to your podcast? I've heard of some folks who they'll listen to them at work, in the background as they're doing work. I like to listen to them in the car. So I've always been looking for some kind of mobile device that I can plug right into my car. I have one of those aux in cables. And so I can plug that into my car and, I got a 20-minute commute so I can listen to the podcast to and from work. With the weather being as bad as it's been of late, I've had a lot of time, to be able to, to be in the car and listen to those. I have not found so Byron says he typically does it on his iPhone, and you know what, I used an iPod Touch for that for a while, and I think the iPhone probably has the best podcast listening app out there at this point. I've tried the iPhone, I've tried Android, I've tried WebOS, which I use Dr. Potter on the WebOS, and none of them compare to how well it does work on the iPhone. That's the one thing I really do miss. I gave my Touch to my daughter, and I don't really use it anymore, but it really does a nice job. Really does a nice job of doing the podcast. So you're just a stay-at-home guy listening to podcasts then, Christian?
Yep.
Okay. And what do you listen to typically? I mean, do you have a big long list that you listen to, or just a few?
No, just a few. Just mostly the Home Server Show and a couple other small ones. But yeah. I'm not a huge podcast guy.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny because I make the podcast, but I'm not the one to listen to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, ironically, I don't, and I mean, hopefully Dave's not listening. I don't get back to listen to the Home Server Show after we record it. It's been hard to, I've been trying to keep up with some other podcasts, especially, you know, Drobo has a podcast that I've been trying to keep up with because we've been doing these reviews on that, and a variety of others that Leo Laporte does on the Twit Network. So, it's tough. It's tough to keep up with them all. Sometimes I try and listen to them at work, but that doesn't always happen for me, and it makes it kind of difficult. So, all right. So different things, different ways of getting to that. So, you know, with Android now opening up that app store, I have to go out and check that out and see how well that works. If you do have an Android phone, that might be something you want to get to in the future. There was a headline that crossed my path this week. I don't want to talk about it a long time, but, you know, because Angry Birds is so popular. Now, I don't imagine, Christian, that you're playing Angry Birds at this point.
No, although I've given it a try. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, but it's not available on your Winmo, right?
Oh, no.
Yeah, and I have purposely left it off my phone. I have heard about how addicting it is and how people are just – once you start playing, you can't stop. I'll be honest, I really can't afford a game like that. I got enough going on with the three podcasts that I do and work and family and all those other things. Although I say that, and lately I've got hooked on this game called Word Feud on Android. I don't know if it's Scrabble in that you can play on your phone against people, you know, it's kind of social network Scrabble. And so you pick an opponent and you can play a random Scrabble board or a fixed Scrabble board, you know, where the double letter, triple letter, double word, triple word are all in the Scrabble letter spots. Anyways, can be very, very addicting. If you're going to watch the Super Bowl this weekend and you're an Angry Birds fan, Fox just announced that actually 20th Century Fox has just purchased a new Super Bowl ad for their animated movie Rio. And in that movie trailer will be an unlock code for a new level of Angry Birds. So kind of a cool little combination between, Angry Birds has sold millions of copies. And so to engage those users in an extra level, you'll get this unlock code. It's kind of interesting, though, because everybody thought those ads were sold out. You know, the Fox, who's going to run the Super Bowl, had claimed back in October that they'd sold all their ads for the game and everything was full. But apparently they found room in their schedule. And this ad, this 30-second ad, is going to cost a cool $2.5 million.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. So, but, you know, $2.5 million, the Angry Birds folks have made that, and I'm sure the Fox is going to subsidize that to get that movie trailer out there and get people watching that. So movies are big stuff these days. So if you're an Angry Birds fan, I don't know, we got anybody in chat who has gotten stuck on Angry Birds as of late on their phone. That is iPhone. That is on the Android. Is that, Byron, is Angry Birds on WebOS at this point? I haven't checked recently. Yeah, past the Angry Birds face. Well, so you did play it on your WebOS. I imagine on that Palm Pre, that would be a pretty small game to try and play. All right. Well, we got through that. Typically, we talk, we go through one of Brian's posts, but Brian is MIA tonight. So if we're still looking for him, he hasn't popped in. I hope he's not sleeping. Christian, we had been talking about a couple weeks ago. We had talked about the difference on your PC between sleep and hibernation, and I've been complaining about that a lot lately. I just got a new image on my laptop at work, and sometimes it just, you know, I'll close the lid and it's supposed to go into either a sleep or hibernation mode, and it does, but then when I try and restart it, it never comes back, and I've had some big problems with it. I know you've spent a bunch of time around that subject, and you put your PCs to sleep every night. Why don't you walk us through what those are and what's the best way to get those set up and for folks to use them?
All right. So just as kind of a disclaimer in the first place here, sleep is not the easiest thing to set up, especially the way Microsoft has done it. There's just a lot of inherent glitches that, especially if you're most of the OEM software companies do try, and keyword is try there, make their PCs compatible with sleep with each new OS, but especially for home builders and some of the stuff that isn't supported that well, sleep can be just really hard to configure from the point where your computer's crashing, you can't, it wakes up within 20 minutes of you putting it to sleep. So there's a lot of issues with it, but the key is once you get it configured where it works, it for me and for a lot of other people, it's kind of a nice thing to have. So the two really main sleep states that there are now is S1, which is hibernation, and S3, which is sleep. And those are both accessible within Windows 7. Now, the default action for Windows 7 is sleep, which is S3. And what that does is when you hit that sleep button on your keyboard or you program your laptop's lid to close, it saves all your information to memory and puts the computer in a very low power state. So this low power state is going to consume about 2 watts an hour, 2 to 4 watts an hour. But when you come back out of sleep, everything's going to be there, and it's going to be there really quickly because it was stored in memory. Now, this model is different from S1 sleep, which is hibernation, because hibernation saves its data to the hard disk and not the memory. So by saving it to the hard disk, the computer is allowed to do a complete shutdown. So there's kind of two pros and cons. You can either have low power usage, so about 2 watts an hour, and get back out of sleep really quick, or you can put it in hibernate, not use any power per hour, and it's quicker than a cold shutdown, but it's not as fast. So part of what I've been spending my time doing with this new build is trying to get sleep to work, and I still haven't been successful. And this is all with brand new hardware from AMD and ATI, and with an Asus motherboard. So it's all state of the art stuff, and it just doesn't work. So who's to blame? The companies, Microsoft as a operating system provider, the hardware manufacturers as not bringing out compatible drivers. So I've played the hunting game as to what the problem is and how I can fix it. So for about a month now, I've been trying to isolate the issue. I've done a clean reinstall. I've disabled all third-party applications. I've tried different drivers, at least 3 for each. And I've gotten to the point where I have to assume it's my graphics card. But unfortunately, the only way you can test is if you have a different graphics card, because uninstalling the graphics driver software won't, the sleep option no longer becomes available within Windows 7. So you can't really test that. But I've had a few instances now where I'll be doing like really intense video editing or watching an HD quality movie, and I'm getting video BSODs and it's resetting. So I know it's not a hardware failure. It's definitely something with software. But for a user, that's really frustrating to not have work the first time you build something like that together. So if you are fortunate enough to have a box that works in sleep and hibernate, which most of mine do except for this new build, then you want to go into Windows 7 and you want to make sure that sleep is configured for how you want it. So if you go to the start menu and your control panel, and you switch to the larger small icon view instead of the categories, which is up on the top right-hand side, you can select power options. And that's going to give you three plans that come by default with Windows. A balanced power performance plan, a high performance plan, and a power saver plan. Now, they all can be changed and configured to have literally the same settings. That's just they give you default profiles. Now, what I recommend for desktops is the high performance power plan, because most of your intensive work, if you do any in the first place, is going to be on the desktop. So I can go ahead and select the radio button for high performance and then hit change plan settings. And then when I go ahead and look into my advanced power settings, I get a couple options. Do I want to request a password when I come back out of sleep? Do I want my processor to run at full all the time? So I'm just going to go through these really quick and hopefully give you a quick idea of the correct configuration options, because a lot of people don't get this right off the bat. So the first one for high performance, require a password. If you're in an environment where there's a lot of other people close to your desktop and have access to it, just go ahead and set that to yes. For the hard disk, I set it to never turn off, because if you're watching a movie on your desktop and it starts to get into the movie and you haven't had any mouse activity, it'll kind of stop and pause the movie, and then you have to shake the mouse to get your hard drive to turn back on. So I leave that at never. Ignore the desktop background settings, because no one cares about that in the first place. For wireless adapter settings, if you're on a desktop, you can leave this at maximum performance. But if you're on a laptop, you may want to try medium power saving or maximum power saving, depending on how much battery life you're getting. So the big one here is the sleep tab. And the two options you have, well, you have four options. If you have sleep enabled, you can do sleep after a specified time. I normally set this to 20 minutes in case my PC turned on for Windows updates. So like Jim has his home server, and when it turns on to wake up his computer, it's going to do a backup. So if you set that too low, then the backup may not complete. So I normally give that at least 20 minutes. Your hybrid sleep option should always be set to off. That's been known to cause some problems. And that's really if you're using sleep. And then if you're using hibernate, there will be an additional radio that says hibernate, gives you the same setting time. But a lot of users, when they get Windows 7, they'll get to this configuration option and they'll say, well, what's going on? I don't see hibernate anywhere. And that's because by default, Windows 7 recommends sleep mode, so they turn off the hibernate plan. But there is an easy fix for that. If you go ahead and you open up command prompt, so go to a run dialog by hitting the start key and holding down the R and typing in CMD, that's going to bring up a command prompt instance for you. And make sure you're running that as an administrator so that you have the proper permissions. And then power CFG as your first word, dash hibernate on. And what that's going to do is it's going to turn on your hibernate options, and then that'll allow you to go in and change those power options so that you can get hibernate working, which is what I'm using right now because sleep still doesn't work. So if you're having problems with sleep or it's not really working the way you expected it, you might want to try hibernate. But I personally still recommend the sleep as the first choice. And finally, you can suspend your USB options in your power supply. So say you have a webcam, an iPod, and your headset all plugged into your USB. You can enable selected suspend, so it suspends these devices when they're not in use. So that's kind of helpful. Power buttons and lid, configure it whether you're on a laptop or desktop. I normally set one to set up and do sleep and one to be a hard shutdown in case there's problems with the PC. And then if you're on a desktop, really leave your maximum processor state at 100%, and you can drop down your minimum processor state anywhere from 5 to 10%. That way, if you're on an AMD or Intel platform, that'll allow your cool and quiet to kick in, and when you're idling or not doing intensive tasks, it'll drop down your computer's CPU speed. So that'll give you more power savings there. So that really covers everything option-wise in Windows 7. Some OEMs do offer their own recommended power supply settings. But really, I can't recommend enough how much sleep has been easier than always starting from a cold boot up. And especially if you're running several computers, it does add up in terms of wattage per dollar. So that is Christian's Corner on the sleep segment for Windows 7.
So let me run this question by you, right? So do you find at times that you have to do a BIOS mod to make sleep right for either OEM or for, you know, Frankenbuild PCs? Is that an option that folks have to do sometimes to get it to work right?
Occasionally, yeah. But the thing is with a lot of these computers, it's some of the modifications you can do aren't going to really help you one way or the other. That's one of the sections where you're really begging the manufacturer to get it right the first time, because there's a lot of code involved with that.
Yeah.
But there are some instances where, like, if you don't have cool and quiet and you can't get your CPU to throttle back, that is something that we really do try and take care of, and we do have some success with. So
really, yeah, it just seems horribly complex. From an average guy standpoint, it's one of those things that that I've struggled with on my PCs. I just leave them on. I mean, I don't even. I guess I let the default. So if I let Windows. If I don't change anything in the power settings when I'm setting up Windows from a base install, what's it going to default to?
It's going to default – I believe it defaults to the balanced plan. So you may – I believe the balanced plan will give you that full 100%, but it doesn't always – depending on what OEM you're on.
Okay.
But you will get – you will automatically have sleep configured for a default state. You won't have like a timer that – I don't think it doesn't configure the timers for you. You have to do that yourself. But it will have sleep ready for you on your startup menu if you have all your drivers installed properly.
Okay. Any kind of recommended – if I've never set the sleep options or the hibernate options or worried about the power settings – any primer or any kind of anything I can go through from an information standpoint, or something you found helpful to that would walk me through, the options that I have, besides listening to what you just said over and over and over again?
Well, there is a really good site, 7Forms. I'm trying to remember who runs it. The guy's handle name is Brink. But if you head over to 7forms.com, they have a really long thread of all the different sleep options and the best way to set that up, and also has a huge list of possible reasons why you're having problems with sleep. So it'll walk you through that and most of the basic options. So we can add that link to the show notes.
Yeah, and Brian, our Brian, was going to spend some time this week. He kind of ran out of time. Talking about that and kind of documenting it here on our site. Maybe we could still do that, because it's one of those things. I still don't get it. It's still not super clear to me, you know. So if I buy a Dell laptop and I have a PC, a home built PC that I've I built and configured myself, those might have two different sleep options enabled in them natively, right? And
right.
They might work differently, is what you're saying as well.
Right, yeah, depending on what the manufacturer is and how they set it up. Especially,
yeah.
I know, like with Toshiba, they have their own special plan going on, that kind of stuff.
Right, yeah. So, okay, well, it's something to struggle through, and I'll be honest, I it's still kind of foreign to me in a lot of ways. I go into those power save options, and I get a little... I get a lot confused on what means what. And then, you know, so if you set it for a certain time, how do you really test that? I mean, you know, you got it. So you walk away from it. I know on my desktop, I haven't had as many problems with sleep mode never coming back as I have on a laptop. It just seems like I can never get it set right on a laptop, so that when I close the lid, I mean, what should happen is I should close the lid. When I'm ready, I should open the lid. It should know the lid is open, and it should come back to life. I mean, that's all I really want it to do. I don't want to push buttons. I don't want to have to do different things, hit the space bar or whatever to get it to wake up. Just open the lid, and sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. So, you know, I don't know if anybody else is frustrated with with the sleep mode in Windows 7. I certainly, in any version of Windows, it's never really worked well for me. So if you have questions on that or you want to make comments along those lines too, you can shoot us a note, podcast at theaverageguy.tv. So my wife is listening upstairs. She's the one who yelled at me that said I was on mute. Because she could hear me talking, but I wasn't coming across on the stream. She's got a question. She says, has anyone ever used a mini USB monitor? I think we've seen these USB monitors available in magazines like ThinkGeek, and I've got a ThinkGeek affiliate advertisement there on our site. But so these little tiny USB monitors. Her job requires that they're like $100 at ThinkGeek. Her job requires that she sometimes needs a second display to test out some of the things that she's doing with the media at our church. Anybody out there in chat, or if you're listening to this recorded, you can send me if you've tried it and it's worked well for you. We're just trying to get some feedback on how well they work. It seems kind of odd to plug in a monitor via USB. I mean, Christian, have you ever tried any of those kinds of monitors?
No.
Okay. Yeah, it does seem like it would be like a digital photo frame. Same kind of idea. It's just they're little 7-inch, 7 or 8-inch, I think, monitors. And it seems, I don't know, that just seems odd to me that would actually work.
Yeah. No, well, they got that new DisplayPort coming out, so that's exciting. My monitor is actually already ready for DisplayPort, but
so,
that's another one.
What is that exactly?
It's going to be possibly the replacement to the HDMI standard.
Okay.
It's just one cable. It can run audio and your video right through it. And I believe I'm not positive, but there's new specifications that are higher than what HDMI is. So that's the new standard that's kind of developing.
And is that across Ethernet?
No, that's...
That's different. That's something different.
Right.
Okay. So is it, what kind of plug? Do you know what the plug looks like? Has that been established yet?
Yeah, I'd have to pull out my monitor here, yeah. But it's very similar to the way the HDMI looks. It almost looks like a double, it's kind of hard to explain. It looks like a double sized USB port. But it's not.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's definitely a bit different.
Okay. And of course, USB 3 is out and has been out for a while and is starting to get more and more popular in devices. I purchased a Gigabyte motherboard a while back. I think I've had that for a couple months now. And have been using USB 3 with that Data Robotics product called Drobo, and actually have been getting really good, have been getting very good speed through that USB 3.
Mm-hmm.
And so that seems to be legit. And this seems to be, if you look at Newegg or some of those other places, it seems like there's more and more devices that are coming out for USB 3. Are you using, I assume you've got USB 3 on your motherboard now?
Yes, it does have two USB ports by NEC, I believe, but I don't have any USB 3 devices to test with. So that's interesting. But all of the AMD 890X chipsets do have USB 3 on board.
Okay. And nothing yet for you to use USB 3 with.
No.
Right. So.
Yeah, I'm still on USB.
Yeah, I have two devices. I bought an external hard drive dock, which has actually been very, very helpful. It was very inexpensive. It's made by a company called, I think it's Eno, I-N-E-O. I'm sure it's just some Chinese company, right? And it's just an external dock that will allow you to put in a 3.5 or 3.25, 2.5. 3.25-inch discs, you just pop them in, and it recognizes them, and away you go. You can format them, you can add data to them. I found it very helpful when I'm moving discs around and I want to format them. and it that works very well. That's USB 3, and I've had great luck with that. And then of course the FS is USB 3, and have had good luck with that too. USB 3 is slower than eSATA, right, Christian?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. Although I haven't had any products to use with eSATA. Do you have anything that you use there?
No. Okay. Unless I'm plugging in an external hard drive.
But. Right. Yeah. And I haven't done that either. So USB 3 is horribly convenient in a lot of ways. And the FS has both eSATA and USB 3, and the USB 3 setup just in a jiffy without any problems. And so I just left it with USB 3 and left that in. That's worked rather well. So good stuff. I'm anxious to get – I moved to do the testing. I moved my Windows 7 image down to a slower PC, and it's just absolutely killing me that I'm on this slower – it's a dual-core box, but it's just not very fast. And so kind of anxious to get through the reviews and put my Windows 7 image back on a Core i3. Even though that i3 is the bottom of the Intel – barrel, so to speak, when it comes to processors, it really is a pretty good, if you're just doing, you know, kind of your average run-of-the-mill stuff, that i3 works pretty well. You of course have got a monster processor there in the new box that you got.
Oh yeah, I got a 6-core. So with the i3, there's 4 cores, and is that hyper-threaded? I believe it's hyper-threaded.
I think it is, yes.
Yeah, so AMD doesn't have that hyper-threading technology, but this does have 6 cores, and it's really easy for one push overclocking. You just hit a button and it clocks almost a whole gigahertz over what it's normally specified to.
Now, when you say push a button, I mean, what button are you pushing?
Well, it's really cool. This is one of those motherboards where that has, rather than messing around with all these jumpers, it has actual like lit up LED buttons you can just press. So if you have an open case system and you're not using a case and it's open bed, there's just a start button. So you just hit the start button, just hit the reset button, and it has something called Turbo Key, which will load, which will automatically give your CPU a boost in all the different clock speeds. And then there's something called a go button, which is a profile you set up in your BIOS, and that has like preset options you've set up to overclock or underclock your computer. So you just hit that button and away you go. That's in an open bed situation. If you're on the desktop itself, you can download, if you're using the Asus software, I have Turbo Key. It's part of the Asus Evo package. You just hit Control Shift A on your keyboard and it throttles the whole computer up. So
yeah, Christian, with overclocking, is that really a geek feature, or is the average person going to be able to take advantage of overclocking realistically?
The average person should never attempt an overclock. Only if you've done a fair amount of reading and studying should you be overclocking your PC, which even I don't want to, because I don't really, unless I'm doing something crazy, overclock, because the longer you can run it at the regular specifications, the better off you're going to be for getting more years out of it than more performance. So
right, yeah, it runs it a little hotter, and the Core i7 chips, are those quad core as well?
Yes, those are quad cores with hyper threads. So you're getting 8 cores really. So
yeah,
that's pretty neat. But we'll see a true 8-core CPU when Intel finishes with their Sandy Bridge, which if any of you guys don't know what that is, it's the upcoming product line for Intel.
Yeah, some good discussions actually for the BYOB guys over the Build Your Own Box podcast over at homeservershow.com. They are, although Christian, you're a lot better at the hardware than I am, but they are hardware experts over there. And most of you guys I see out in chat have migrated over from the Home Server Show and are kind enough to listen out here tonight. So you're well aware of that. But if you're listening on the recorded version of this and you haven't checked that out, homeservershow.com, and look for the BYOB, and that stands for Build Your Own Box. Those guys are pretty knowledgeable on the stuff that they do around building PCs. That gets a little more complicated. They throw out a whole bunch of numbers and letters and stuff and make it all work somehow. You know, I almost exclusively build all my own boxes at this point, but I don't spend a lot of time tweaking them. I want to put them together and then use them just as quick as possible. I don't overclock. I don't spend, you know, I load the drivers one time and then I call it good.
Yep.
Okay, Christian, anything else? I think we're going to shorten the show up tonight. I know you're off to some things this evening, and Brian didn't join us, so we'll shorten the podcast a little bit and give everybody a break, give them a chance to go over and maybe listen to the Home Server Show tomorrow night as we've changed those dates.
Yep. Well, actually, really quickly, before we wrap it up for tonight, TechSpot is this PC review site with a lot of other articles, and they have two really funny articles that are just paramount for understanding some of the stupid stuff big companies do. So the first one here is Yahoo accidentally deletes a Flickr account with over 4,000 pictures on it. So this German photographer gets on his Flickr account and realizes that a different user had somehow stolen his materials, and he contacts Flickr, the staff, and they said they're going to check for any problems. And they figured out there was a fraudulent account, but they accidentally deleted the genuine account and not the fraudulent one. And then they proceeded to tell him they had no way of restoring his photos and his work, and that to make up for it, they were going to give him 4 free years of the pro service. So,
yeah, well, they'll never get those pictures back, right?
Right. So there's lawsuit number one for you.
Yeah.
And that's a Yahoo-run service, Flickr. Right. That's pretty large, and that's pretty embarrassing that they don't have backup services.
Right.
There's something wrong with that picture.
Well, and we've talked about this in the backup stuff that we do. You've got to keep a copy local. You just have to. You can't put everything in the cloud. I mean, you know, the cloud is a place for backup, but I really do believe you've got to keep a copy of everything local, or at least within your control.
Yeah, no, I agree completely with Brian in the chat that I don't trust the cloud either. It's just, you know, I'll use it, but I'm not going to use it with any data I care about.
So. Yeah, if it's really, really important, you got to have it in a couple different places. Speaking of that, so Mozy changed their – so this, speaking of cloud-based backup, this week Mozy changed their terms and conditions on their unlimited account, and I couldn't exactly tell you what all the changes were, but CrashPlan quickly came out with a transfer to CrashPlan and get a 15% discount if you were a Mozy customer coupon code. So it must have angered some Mozy customers, and my understanding is that they've had great success in wooing some of the Mozy customers over to CrashPlan. So if you're into the online backup scene and you're a Mozy customer, maybe like to hear your thoughts on what went on over there, and are you disgruntled enough that you would leave? It's always kind of interesting how those things work and how people find their way, you know, around or to different services and sites. We've talked about all those on the Home Server Show in the past and talked about even some of them here. So, some interesting things, with online backup.
So the second article from TechSpot, which was a good laugh, was, almost 100,000 U.S. torrent users have been sued within the last year. So again, I know a lot of people who use uTorrent, and obviously some very sketchy files that are copyrighted get out and get distributed and then seeded, and they go all over the place. So I'm never going to get tangled in it. I don't know if you or Brian use uTorrent.
No, I'm not. I know the kids mess around with that from time to time.
Yep.
Yeah.
So if you're using uTorrent,
John Zadler.
Yeah, John. And to anyone else who's using uTorrent on their servers or their desktops, have half a brain when you open up the program, and try not to get yourself in another lawsuit if you want one.
Yeah.
The easiest way is to see how many copyrighted materials you can find and download. And depending on where you live, mostly Western civilizations are cracking down on this. You will be found. But if you're still on the eastern half of the hemisphere, you have high chances of getting away successfully. So I don't really know what the ratio is between people who use it legitimately or illegitimately.
Right. So what's the legitimate use of a uTorrent?
Well, the whole thing about torrenting is that unlike a regular HTTP download where you're going to a website and you're clicking the download link,
right.
You're only downloading that from one source. When you're using a torrent, it's everybody has a copy of the file, and people who want to get the file, when you go to download it from the torrent, you grab little bits and pieces from everyone. So you're downloading segments of the file simultaneously, which makes the download theoretically faster, and you can queue that up. So if you downloaded the latest copy of someone's news report and you put it up on a torrent for everyone in the office to download, the more people who downloaded it, the faster it would be for the next guy. So that's the theory about it, as long as it's legal. So the whole thing with uTorrent being a kind of a breeding ground for illegal software is the fact that who's to point the finger at? You kind of have to trace back who's the original person who put the file up there, as opposed to someone who's just reseeding it or right. et cetera. So
there are legal – I mean, there are legal ways to use torrents.
Oh, clearly, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's just not – just because they're using a torrent does not necessarily make it illegal.
Right.
But where it gets illegal is when we talk about – and this goes way back to some services – you know, if we think about LimeWire and some of those services, which I think is still around, but when music torrenting got big, you know, back in what would they, 2003, 2002, I can't remember when that was. Of course, all of those are copyrighted, and so it's not legal to download music via a torrent or copyrighted movies or copyrighted TV shows, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a comment in the chat, F3 Bandit says, Blizzard uses Torrent to distribute game patches. So I imagine for an organization that had large files that they wanted to distribute to a lot of customers, they could set up their patch systems or their downloads via like a torrent, and that would make it faster for the customer then, right?
Right, yeah. So Byron's saying here that he's asking if the theory of legitimate torrenting is based on how much download speed each user has. So, yeah, it's really how much – it's actually more of how much upload speed you have.
Right.
Because you're sending a segment of the file to someone else. So upload speed is just as important as download speed when using a torrent. And like in programs like uTorrent and other clients, you can set a limit or unlimit how much bandwidth that program is allowed to use.
Okay.
So,
yeah, because it really isn't download, right? It really is. If in the torrent, it's the slowest up speed that matters, right?
Right.
Yeah, because you're pulling it from somebody else's computer, and they may not necessarily have a great connection to the internet on the upside.
Exactly.
Although that's getting less and less common. I mean, most people's up speeds are getting pretty good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just know there's been a lot of talk around that, and I know a lot of people use it, and there's probably a lot of misconceptions around it as well.
Right, especially with, like, the Pirate Bay being notorious for uTorrent P2P sharing. That it's kind of – it's in some minds it's had a bad rap, but it's a powerful technology. It's just how you use it.
Right. So if I'm an average guy – I just need to go in eyes wide open, right, with it, and I need to really kind of watch the content that I'm right. subscribing to or that I'm downloading.
Yep.
Some of it could be copyrighted material.
Yep.
All right. Good enough. Well, I think we'll wrap things up here. I do want to mention I got an opportunity this last weekend. I was out down in Kansas City, ran a race. We took some video of it. It's amazing what you can do with technology. You know, we kind of did this at CES where we took our phones and we did everything from our phones. But we ran this 10K race inside a cave. So I was able to go down there, take my phone. We did some shots going into the caves. Once I got in there, I used a voice recorder. We did some We did some interviews down there, and you can listen to all of that if you go over to theaverageguy.tv, and there's a post out there where I talk about what we did on that. And recorded a little 12-minute segment actually in the cave. So if you're an athlete, if you're into running, if you're into sports or competition, it's kind of a fun little interview that I did last weekend. It's actually was real popular once I put it out there. So if you haven't heard it yet, go out and take a peek. There wasn't a lot of echoes in it. I'd be interested in your feedback. You can send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. Christian, you got anything lined up for the weekend? Anything fun and exciting lined up for the weekend? You gonna do anything tech-wise?
Probably just more work on the site. I've been kind of pushing to get that site cleaned up some more as much as I can.
To our site or to the BIOS mod site?
BIOS mods. Okay. We got the average guy.
We spent quite a bit of time
streamlining last weekend. It's still a bit. It's not bad. I had to call the hosting provider and tried to describe that they didn't turn on pretty much the most fundamental web component out there for Linux-based hosting. So
yeah,
that was part of the weekend of my time, was fighting that out. But it's pretty good now, site speed-wise. There's still some little thing that I can't really figure out. That's just, it doesn't feel like the site page is responding within the right time. The latency might be a bit high, but we're getting there. The cache should be much better. So if you're a regular user to the site, it'll be much quicker, hopefully, as you use it more.
I've noticed a big change in the site. It was absolutely dragging for a while. And now when I go out there, you know, we got a lot of content showing up, including those, each one of those players is a Flash player, right? And so, those take a while to show up. You know, on the right hand column are all the shows that we do, the three shows, and there's a couple more coming, but, those are Flash and they're not the smallest things in the world. Christian, you've done a nice job of getting the site at least working right. If you've got any comments on how the site's laid out or any information that you'd like to see on the site, we do this stuff for you guys. So let us know, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. One more thing. I mentioned this early in the show, but I'll let you know. I am looking, if you've noticed, I took the on-the-air logo off the site because one, I stole it from another site and I was feeling bad about that, the graphic. And I'm a big believer in making sure things are legit. So if there's any graphic artists out there who want to create an on the air or a live button for me that would be original and would look right, you know, I have a real gray and white kind of scheme here except the green picture up top. But if there's anybody who wants to create a button for me that says live or on the air or something like that, and they want to, I'll give them a little credit for it, and they can create that for me and send it over to me, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. All right, we got a busy weekend. We've got a home server show moved to tomorrow night. So if you're listening to this live and you're wondering when the home server show is going to come on, that actually we'll record that tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Central. John and I will come on and get folks warmed up in chat and ready to go. We've got a special fitness tech podcast show that we're going to do 9:30 on Friday night. I know that's a little late, but actually it's kind of early on the West Coast. So join us this Friday. That's the 4th, 9:30. And then we've got some video things coming. Dave and I and the folks at the fitness tech podcast have been working on some video stuff. So all kinds of cool stuff going on the podcast. And if you have ideas for us, let us know. We'd love your feedback. And we'll continue to try and do what we can to make this a great experience for you as Christian types wildly away in the background.
That's right.
You're a crazy guy. Christian, thanks for all the work that you've done on the site in the last couple of weeks. It's been very helpful. And we'll do it all again. We're back to the normal schedule next week. We'll be on Thursday, 7 Central. And we'll get back to normal. So we'll go from there. Christian, yep. Christian, have a great week.
You too. Oh, and a couple shout-outs to the moderator, Jason, who joined us from BIOS Mods again. Props to him, as always. My friend Alex kind of tied a rope around his neck and told him to get on chat. So good for him.
Oh, good.
And a shout out to my cousin, who I will include in the show notes for the new music we're going to put on the beginning and the end of the podcast that I'm convincing Jim to put on. So.
Well, he's trying to. We'll see yet. I've been messing around actually with the intro to the show. So I've got some new ideas on some things that I want to try, and that music may just be a part of it. So we've got some new things coming. I like to speak into that. I mean, if you have any original, if you're a musician and you've got any original music that you've written that we can use, oh, I need really probably a full minute worth of it. And you're willing to turn over the rights to us to say it's okay to distribute that on the podcast. I'd love to hear it. So if you want to get noticed, I always like to mess around with trying new things out. You can send that to us as well. So, all right, Christian, have a good evening. I know you're off. Be safe and drive safe in the snow. And I appreciate you taking the time to do the podcast tonight.
Will do, Jim. Have a good night.
All right. Good night.